Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is James Hayes. I am a trainer with the INE Institute and used to be an organizer with the Ohio Student Association.
Excellent. And so there are a lot of reasons I wanted to talk to you, but was re-reminded of this yesterday when you posted something on Facebook talking about the need to go beyond Trump, to think beyond Trump, to really think not just about resistance, but revolution, and not like violent guns and whatever revolution, but like actually fundamentally changing society. And so I really wanted to talk a little bit about that because I think it does occasionally get lost in the wealth of horrors that Trump provides us, that like for a lot of people, the normal that would have happened if Hillary Clinton had won this election was never going to be acceptable.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think, yeah, this question of how do we move from just being in the mode of resistance and rebellion to actually figuring out how do we reorganize society, I think that's like the central question for our movements and for our generation and for those of us who really want to deal with the fundamental problems that produced a Trump presidency in the first place and that are producing these right-wing populist movements all across the world, really. So fundamentally, I think part of what we have to do is be clear on what we mean when we talk about a revolution. The word gets thrown around so much. On that Facebook post that I made the other day, someone commented that Hillary Clinton's presidency would have been revolutionary. And so, you know, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of different ideas about what a revolution is. Yeah, so I just want to sort of open up the conversation a little bit. I have some of my own thoughts about how we can get more clear on what it means to fight for revolution. But yeah, I think it's just probably the most central question right now, because even the centrists and the neoliberals are part of the resistance now. And I don't think we need to try to stop them from taking that title. I think it's actually useful that they're in that mode and they don't have a clear vision for how to actually fix these problems. But people, you know, across the country who know that we need healthcare for all, that we need free college, that we need to deal with inequality, that we need to address racism and misogyny, you know, people have been offering solutions for how to fix this country for a long time. And we just need to, you know, get out of their way.
And I think one of the things that's been happening over the last few years, and, you know, I can't remember exactly when we met, but it was something to do with OSA and, you know, watching, sort of, I've been watching all these movement groups come up over the last several years who really are thinking much, much bigger. And that doesn't often get covered. It doesn't really, come across to say, like, this is a group that's fighting police brutality. And of course you are fighting police brutality every day, but there's also so many bigger conversations that are happening that I feel like need more space in public.
Yeah, totally. And so often, you know, our movements were stuck in a reactionary phase and posture, because there's so much happening urgently that we have to address. But you know, I think the last several years I've seen movements in this country develop, and there's a lot more people who are asking very deep questions about how do we actually move beyond just, you know, being against police brutality and against racism and those type of things, but really are people over four, and also figuring out what is the strategy to get there. And we definitely need more spaces for that. And it's really, I think after the election, it became even harder to have that space because of how pressing everything was. And then after the inauguration and Trump starts signing all these executive orders, you know, one after the other, And we saw people, you know, jumping into the streets. But now, you know, the resistance is still strong. And with, you know, the firing of Comey, the other day, you know, it was getting stronger even. But this question of how do we actually move forward isn't really being addressed. And I think, you know, even in the movement, so I think part of what's going to happen is, you know, our social movement leaders are going to have to start taking responsibility for answering that question, and then also fighting to have the power to govern society to actually put those answers into motion, rather than, you know, just sort of being in the social movement space forever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because we're getting to this point, both because of Trump and also just because I think of the maturity of the movements of the last several years, where people are thinking seriously about what would it look like if we took power. You know, Bernie Sanders had a lot of flaws, but also presented this moment to think about, like, oh, what if our people could win? What if we were in charge?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, you know, for me, the day after the election, I was just kicking myself that I didn't do more personally and also as a participant and leader in my movement to push us to engage even more with the election and with the Sanders campaign in the primary. I wasn't really, you know, sold on him as a person or as a candidate, but after the election, I was thinking, wow, Bernie came so close, and I started to just reassess, you know, how I want to engage, you know, questions around like electoral politics and whatnot in the future. Because, you know, having a Bernie Sanders presidency, which we honestly could have had because the times we're in right now are so different, than what I expected at the beginning of the election. I don't think I fully appreciated, you know, how ripe these times are for populist, political campaigns. And really, I think part of that is due to how successful the movements have been at polarizing society and exposing the deep problems that you know, the elites and the traditional political establishment doesn't have an answer for. But now the social, you know, and Bernie Sanders was sort of the best, was without a doubt the best that we had to try to address some of these things. And hopefully moving forward, we can continue to find other folks to run, but it's, you know, it's looking like 2020 is going to be really slim, in terms of people to support.
So you work with a couple of national organizations that are thinking about and working on social movement strategy. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that work that you've been doing.
Yeah. So I've been working with the INE Institute, which, is a training institute that supports a couple different, training programs and community practice, and the program that helped, that we support that is doing sort of the most work, I would say, is the Momentum training program, which is really looking at how do we create mass popular social movements that can give participants what they need to maintain a balance of autonomy and unity, so that we can grow in a sort of distributed, decentralized way, but have a set of principles and what we call DNA to really help guide the movement. A lot of the thinking has sort of been influenced by, you know, civil resistance theory and some of the folks from like OP, from different struggles like OP4 and Serbia and the writing of Erica Chenoweth and a lot of folks, in the last couple of years, there's also been groups in the country, such as COSECHA, and If Not Now, which have launched, based on sort of momentum, you know, theory, the momentum frameworks, and also have gone through a process to develop their own DNA. And it's been really amazing to watch how fast each of those movements has grown, in terms of the membership and the leadership and the types of actions that they're able to take on. So I'm really excited about Momentum. We just finished doing a Momentum training the end of February for about 95 leaders from across the movement for Black Lives, and it was really a special experience. And I'm really excited to see what comes out of some of those conversations that we had just a couple months ago.
Yeah, yeah. And you also mentioned that you've been working with All of Us.
Yes, I'm working with All of Us, which is a project being pulled together by a lot of people who are coming out of the social movement. We've seen a rise over the last several years. People who've seen the limitations and the strengths of the social movement, and really want to figure out how do we take on the challenge of winning power so we can govern and not just sort of be on the outside looking in and protesting, but actually right. take over so that we can set the direction for the country moving forward. And I feel like part of what is driving the team to come together is a desire to really reclaim the identity of the country. And there's been a lot of conversation about how we need to resist Trump and we need to resist Trump. And there's actually a really interesting conversation that Michelle Alexander was a part of. She actually said that Trump is the resistance. She named Trump as the resistance in opposition to all of the progressive forces throughout the history of the country that have been really pushing to make true the words on parchment that say liberty and justice for all, that all human beings are created equal, and that this is a country that can be home for everybody who calls it home. And that's what really excites me the most, is that so, like, the less we defeated this idea that this whole idea of the country then it pushes to the right wing and to the worst elements of the nation, and we've just sort of taken its fact that this nation started in slavery and genocide, can't be redeemed. But we actually think that there, at the beginning of the country, was a revolutionary promise, revolutionary in the history of the world, that is still yet to be fulfilled, and that's actually the major task of our generation today and successive generations to come, is to keep figuring out how do we fulfill the revolutionary promise of South America and defeat Donald Trump in the meantime.
The questions of power and institution building are ones that have been sort of fraught for a lot of people on the left, and particularly electoral politics. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see the way that's shifting. So speaking of power in your communities, talk about some of the work that's been going on in Ohio, where you are. And I guess we can start with the cops because, well, they are reliably terrible.
They are. They are very reliably terrible. The police. They are. In Columbus, just this last weekend, we actually had about 500 people come down from all over the state. There was a march organized by a bunch of different organizations for racial justice, and folks went to the governor's mansion, where the governor doesn't actually live, but the taxpayers still pay, they have the long cut and all of that, to deliver this message that there were several mothers of young men who've been murdered by the police in the last year, who were there, and right now there's been several, pretty high-profile police murders in Columbus, at least, they have broken nationally, but in the city, a lot of people are talking about them. 13-year-old Tyree King was murdered in September. 23-year-old Henry Green was murdered last June. And in January of this year, Jerron Thomas was murdered. Jerron Thomas was a man who was calling 911 for help. He's calling for help because he's having a schizophrenic episode, and he told them that. And when the ambulance showed up, there were also multiple cruisers who showed up as well. He ended up in a coma after the police beat him and died in the hospital later. And a few weeks after that, over 100,000 dash cam videos were erased or lost or misplaced or something, never to be found again. And so there's just a lot of that going on, as well as the cop who shot and killed the 23-year-old Henry Green last summer. Just a couple weeks ago, he was not indicted after a grand jury convened for a little while in that investigation. And then a week after, he was found, to not need to go to trial. He was caught on camera stomping another man's head into the ground while he was already handcuffed. His name is Officer Rosen, and so now people in the community are calling for him to be fired, as well as the officer who killed Tyree King. And there's a lot of organizing going on, both around sort of the issue and sort of different issue-based campaigning and protesting and movement building work, but also there's actually an electoral challenge happening in the city. There's a group here called Yes We Can that is running folks for city council sort of against the establishment incumbent Democrats. And it's a really exciting time in the city because while we have the a lot of the movement work going on and people are mobilizing, we also have this this very real electoral threat. There's a nice sort of movement ecology developing in the city with a lot of different types of organizations supporting each other. So it's exciting to see, even in the midst of all the tragedies that continue to happen here, the way people are finding creative ways to come together and fight, and there's so much resilience in this community. And honestly, everything in this country is so crazy. But the community here really grounds me, helps me remember that, we always have to keep fighting, because that's what people do here. People just keep fighting.
I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about the Yes We Can effort and the sort of grappling with local electoral politics.
Yeah, so, the local politics is, it's pretty crazy. There's... in my city, there's been one person in my lifetime who has run for city council as not an incumbent and won. Everyone else has been, if they get appointed to be on city council, if it's their first time in, somebody steps down and they get appointed. Then their first election, they actually run as an incumbent every time, And there's really a sort of a hegemony of the sample ballot here, where if you're on the Democratic Party's sample ballot, they say these are our endorsed candidates, then you win. And if you're not, then it's you lose. And so there's a really sort of high bar of entry into local politics here. If you're not part of the if you're not part of the Democratic Party establishment, you haven't kind of waited your turn and been picked. And so what's happening with Yes We Can is really exciting, because for the first time, in the last 20 years, there's actually a chance to see some people run with a real vision for how to help the city. And not just the city, but that's really connected to a national strategy. But how do we fight back against Trump's America? Because in Ohio, we've already been dealing with Trump's America with our state legislature. And then also, Columbus is such a progressive city, certainly in comparison to the rest of the state. But there's still, so much, that happens here. On the same night that the mayor and the city council members, declared the city a sanctuary city, there was a 4,000 person protest, at the state house, where people were protesting the Muslim ban. And, later, a bunch of us, including myself, we got maced. There were a bunch of Muslim youth, Somali refugees. We have a huge Somali population here in Columbus. A lot of young Muslim kids are out, just like standing against the Muslim ban. Mm-hmm. And, a few hours after the city was declared a sanctuary city, we were all maced. So I think that just illustrates the contradictions that are right in the city. And so it's really exciting that Yes We Can is, they had the primary on May 2nd, and all of their candidates, they're running for city council and also for school board. And all of the candidates made it through the primary and are going to be facing off against the incumbents in the general election. I think things are going to get really interesting here, for sure.
I guess I wanted to ask in particular, right, the question of primarying Democrats has sort of come up around, it seemed to come up a lot in early days around Trump's cabinet being confirmed and certain people voting for Trump's cabinet nominees. But then these days, it's because of Trump, it seems like there's like a doubling down and of criticism of people who dare to suggest that Democrats might also be part of the problem. So I wonder if you guys have experienced, if you've been experiencing any of that.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, both. I'm not super, I haven't been really involved in the Yes We Can campaigning, but I've seen, people saying, don't come after us, but also people, saying, well, you're not even a Democrat because you have all these other ideas, and it's, the Democrats narrowing their own base for, not very logical in politics. You want to have more people on your team. But, I see it all over the place. And it's part of the reason I wrote that Facebook post the other day about needing to distinguish between the resistance and the revolution, because these folks who don't want to deal with the idea that Democrats might be part of the problem, they just want to take us back to the world of Barack Obama, the world where we're, where Guantanamo is still open, where we're still involved in multiple wars, where, we, bail out the banks and don't bail out homeowners, where we, black people are being shot down every 2 weeks on Facebook Live and it's fine. That's the world that they want to go to and want to live in, want to stay in. And they don't want to deal with the fact that we have to move forward. We have to move forward. And the thing is, like, it doesn't even matter what they want. It's like we are moving forward regardless of, they want to deal with these issues or not. And so, but it's just emblematic of, the issues of just this mediocre leadership in the Democratic Party, across the board. And I know because I used to work my first job in this whole thing when I was a page in the State House. I was like, man. Yeah, I like all these people. They're great people. If they see this, I don't think they're bad people. But mediocre leadership. Lord have mercy.
So let me see. I'm trying to find a way to wrap all these things together. I guess, so going forward, thinking about specifically electoral politics, and I'm thinking about some of the things that, we've seen this year. We've seen Chokwe Antar-Lumumba get elected get through the Democratic primary anyway in Jackson, Coed Kamau in Atlanta. I guess I'm not trying to be like, are you going to run for office? But, but I'm wondering what you're thinking about electoral politics moving forward after the city council election.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely, considering, a couple of years ago, I would have said, no, I never would have run for office. And now I'm sort of, reassessing a lot of things. But, I definitely think, the folks at Yes We Can have done a great job in our city, and I think there's going to be, in other cities, there's folks who are trying to do the same thing. I think there's also ways to use, electoral politics to engage people around issues, like, using ballot initiatives. Something that I know there's a lot of interest in doing is bringing, ballot initiatives to the state that can, that we can use to really build new sort of alliances of different types of folks, like particularly around like criminal justice reform. One in six people in the state of Ohio has a family member who is incarcerated or has been incarcerated or themselves was incarcerated. So, there's just so many, it affects, something like that issue that affects so many people. And so we were looking at stuff like Prop 47 in California and thinking, You know, would there be an ability to do something like that in this state in 2018? And part of why you'll want to do that too is because in 2018 is when we have the governor's race in the state of, in Ohio. And if a Republican wins, I probably will end up moving from the state at some point because it'll be until 2030 until we can actually do something about the gerrymandered districts. So, there's just, for me, it's like, wow, this stuff is really, there's a lot on the line right now, in my state. So I think there'll be people running for office. I think we can have people run for Congress and run for Senate, and maybe not in Ohio. Our Democratic senator is pretty good, but, relatives. But, but maybe, maybe we should primary them all. I don't know.
Can't hurt. Awesome.
Yeah, can't hurt.
How can people keep up with you and your work and sign up to get some of your trainings?
Word. Yeah, well, people can go to the website of the AYNI Institute, AYNI.institute, and check out any upcoming trainings that are there. The next training that we're doing is in July. It's going to be a four-day training called Movement Ecology, or maybe with this title of Social Movement Ecology. It's going to be very exciting. And folks should also check out all of us on Twitter and also on Facebook, and just pay attention to everything that's coming out of there. I don't really get on social media much myself, but my Twitter is Contraband James. At Contraband James, I should say. People can follow me there. If I ever tweet anything, you can find it. Those are probably the best ways to keep up with me right now.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.